Trevor Zamparelli on 2FM
with Virgin Mobile. Go from scrolling through stories to creating your own. Freedom is calling. Virgin Mobile. Bring on amazing.
Okay, now let's get back to the show.
Warning. The following item is not recommended for little ears.
Because it's time for a dose of sex therapy with Rachel Cook.
I presume she's on external one. Good morning, Rachel. How are you?
I'm great, thanks. I hear you're having fights about toasters. You might want to have some sex.
Forget yes. That's exactly what is going on. I mean, you know things. Listen, you're very welcome back to our sex therapy session, everybody. Rachel Cook is our resident therapist. She's amazing. And we got a lot of questions in from people who a lot want to stay anonymous, a lot of relationship queries and questions that I'm going to put to you. Are you ready?
I'm so ready. You know what? I'm also really looking forward to the day when people are, not that people, there's anything wrong with being anonymous, but you know, when we can get live callers and people asking stuff
air, that'd be great. Jesus, hey, Chris, listen, we've just got used to you saying lube on the airwaves. I mean, give us a second. I know that's taken 3 years, but there's like, we're Irish people, like it took us 40 odd years to be able to get contraception for free in the country. Let's just baby steps, Rachel.
Baby steps. Here we go.
But at least we're taking steps forward. I mean, you wouldn't have heard this back on air, you know, back in the day. So we're doing well. The first question I have you, it came in, I think, via email. It says, hi, Jennifer. I'd like to stay anonymous. My question is this. Sometimes during sex, I get very overwhelmed and I get emotional and I start to cry uncontrollably. How can I stop this from happening? And is it common, Rachel?
Oh, so I feel a lot for this person, actually, because a lot of people think that that is incredibly rare and unusual. And, you know, sadly, in some ways, it's not. Now, there's many, many different aspects to this because, you know, this person has said overwhelmed and emotional. That doesn't necessarily mean that they're upset. It may mean that they are, you know, experiencing a lot of sensation, maybe a lot of connection with their partner. And for some of us, you know, crying is simply tears coming, you know, water coming out of our eyes as a way of expressing intense sort of emotion and sensation. So it's not necessarily bad. However, it could mean that this person is having, you know, that they don't feel maybe particularly safe or comfortable. And so their body is kind of reacting to that as such. Maybe they're doing things that they don't feel particularly comfortable with during sex. Maybe they're having sex with someone when they're not on very good terms, although that works really well for some people. For others, they don't actually feel okay with being intimate in that way when they're not getting on at all.
Is it a common thing, Rachel?
I would say it's reasonably common. It's definitely not amazingly rare. But because there's so many reasons for it,
Find out the reason is
definitely somewhat common. But I hesitate to say common in the sense of totally normalizing that, because obviously if it's just an expression of intense feelings, that's absolutely fine. But if it's because the person is potentially experiencing, you know, trauma flashbacks, or they're not comfortable with what's happening, or it hasn't been consensual and so the person is not feeling safe, then obviously, you know, if it's common, that's really bad because that needs to not be happening. So I would say this person needs to take some time to just work out what's going on for them in the moment when it's happening. How long has this been going on? When did it start? It might be very good to work with a therapist around that, and certainly talk to your sexual partner or partners about what's going on.
Get to the bottom of it first and foremost. The next one says, hi, Rachel and Jen. I'm a married man and have what you'd call a normal relationship. We have three.
No such thing.
Exactly. We have, just because you fight over toasters doesn't make you normal. We have three young kids, so our opportunities for intimacy are fairly limited because we're both very tired every night. We can all relate to that. Sometimes I will masturbate to relieve built up tension, as the chances of sex with my wife at the moment are fairly slim. However, there have been occasions recently where she has initiated sex, but I can't perform, as I may have sorted myself out a couple of hours earlier. I make excuses and, of course, regret then masturbating. I'm too embarrassed to tell her why I don't want to have sex, but she finds it odd when I'm not up for it. Should I tell her the truth about what I'm doing? Thanks.
I think this person should definitely, you know, this is not a crime to be admitting to. There is absolutely nothing wrong with masturbating. It is a form of stress relief. it can be, you know, something that feels like, you know, most people will, you know, can recognize in themselves that they have like a solo sex life. And that's not cheating on your partner. It doesn't mean that you are actively excluding them or doing something wrong or shameful. You know, it is absolutely okay for you to have your own solo sex life. Some people can masturbate and then, you know, very easily have sex minutes later or hours later. For other people, it takes potentially up to a couple of days before they can have sex again. So, you know, definitely it sounds like there's quite a lot of underlying narratives here, which may or may not have been, you know, kind of explicitly shared between these people as to what it means to masturbate and whether, you know, that might be something that one or both of them experiences yeah. as a rejection or shameful in some way. So I would say definitely talk to your wife about this. And if she has a problem with it, you know, that you can both go read up about this, you know, educate yourselves around it. And you'll probably feel a lot more comfortable that it's totally fine to masturbate. And also it might be that you just have better, more communication around this beforehand, where you might say, hey, I'm feeling pretty up for it, feeling frisky. How are you feeling? Do you think you might be up for some sex later? And if she's like, you know what, I'm already exhausted, no thanks, then it can be like, great, fab, I'll go enjoy myself on my own.
And she'd probably feel a lot better knowing the fact that the reason you can't perform is because you were masturbating earlier on, not because of any other reason. Do you know what I mean? Like, you're stressed or you're not into her or whatever. So she would probably feel a lot better if you are honest. So honesty is the best way to go there, for sure. We need to talk about endometriosis. Hi, Jen. Rachel, any advice on how to deal with low libido and painful sex caused by endometriosis? Greatly appreciated. S.
Yeah, so endometriosis is, you know, again, unfortunately, pretty common. More and more people are recognizing that they have had it potentially for years, and it can, you know, it can do all sorts to your body, and it can come in waves. And so I think, you know, doing things like being able to track whether you can recognize that there's cycles to do with that relating to, it could be the amount of exercise you're getting, your diet, the amount of stress in your life. There's going to be certain kinds of sex that will feel much less painful, which again, it might depend on where you're at in the kind of stages of your endometriosis, if there tends to be a sort of a cycle for you there. Which can also depend on your menstrual cycle. So I would say, you know, talking to, you know, this person has said just dealing with low libido. I'm guessing that they mean in relation to having sex with a partner, although they may just mean that sometimes, you know, they've low libido themselves and that doesn't make them feel great about themselves, which I would say, you know, figuring out some stuff on your own, masturbating in different ways with different toys, different lubes, things like that, that can really help to figure out what are the sort of positions, types of touch, sensations, types of penetration and kind of depths of penetration and things like that that feel comfortable, uncomfortable, or sometimes you're just not going to know. And so you know, need to figure out sort of communication around how to talk to your partners about going really slow or making sure that some things are going to be off the table at certain times, so that, you know, it's not just constantly full of sort of feeling deflated and very disappointed or potentially even sort of, you know, ashamed of yourself, which is just completely unnecessary. Because, you know, this is a condition that there's only so much you can do to control that. And so the more communication you can have with understanding partners, the better.
Good advice. The next one says, how do you deal with difficult in-laws causing friction in your relationship? Getting married soon, I'm feeling the strain from the in-laws. Wondering if I'll have to put up this forever. Can I take this one, Rachel?
Go ahead. Go on.
You're going to have to deal with it forever, right? This is your life now. I would lay the law down now, straight away, because when you get married, it's going to get worse.
Great advice. I would say just murder your partner and then you don't have to bother dealing
married.
With it.
The in-laws is a tricky one. I mean, I love my in-laws. I do. I really do. But there are moments you're like, really? Oh, they're coming over again for how many days or whatever. So,
You're going to be in trouble with more than toasters later, Jen.
I know, but it's a difficult one to navigate because that's their family and your family now. But you have to be completely upfront and honest about how you feel about certain situations and don't bend for the sake of hurting. You're afraid you're going to hurt someone's feelings because it'll keep happening, and that will build up and just wreck your head, you know, 20 years down the line, I would say.
Fantastic advice. No, totally, because there's, you know, it will probably be quite a while that you know these people. So I would say there is a line where no one can say exactly where that line is, but between kind of negotiating and people pleasing, or being just like totally rigid, where, you know, ideally you're quite clear on your own sort of values and integrity and kind of boundaries, and you know how to communicate those, and that there might be sometimes a bit of leeway, but that if you know these are people who, you know, you give an inch and they take a mile sort of thing, then you're just going to have to be firmer. You can be very firm about your boundaries without being unkind.
Yes.
If you are hoping that you will be seen as nice, you know, I talk about this all the time. There's a big difference between being kind and being nice, because it's not possible to be nice all the time, or for people to experience you as nice all the time without massively sacrificing yourself, because there's just so many situations where you're not going to want the same things, or you're not going to have the same sort of views on stuff and preferences or whatever. So you've got to get used to being firm but kind and very boundaried, because otherwise you'll just be done in. You'll be so exhausted and resentful,
and it'll cause friction, and you start fighting over toasters with your husband, and you don't want that. But to the person who emailed that in or texted in, I'm here for you. Okay, I'm here. Stay strong, sister. I'm here for you. Listen, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back, and we need to talk about living together after splitting up and bad sex. Don't go anywhere. RTE. Welcome back to the show. We are in the middle of sex therapy with Rachel Cook. Rachel, are you there? Rachel, come in, Rachel.
Oh, I'm here. I'm always here.
Okay, we've a load more to get through. Okay, so a few more that, and the emails keep coming, can I just say, so thank you for that. And we will come back to it next week, because I think this is the way we're going to go with our Q&As, because people of Ireland need our help, Rachel. Okay.
They do, and there's just so many, you know, we've done our best with all these different topics, but at the end of the day, we just have people, you know, throwing these questions at us.
And it's good to focus, and the Q&A is great, because it's quite varied, because, you know, it's not focusing on one particular subject. I mean, and this will cater for everybody, because it could be a relationship, it could be a sexual thing, it could be an endometriosis. I mean, it's so vast. Okay, the next one, Rachel, it says, hi Jen, I wish to remain anonymous, but I have a question. Okay, I may have had a snoop through my fiance's search history before and saw that he was looking at porn. Help, I don't know what to make of this. My head is wrecked. Thanks for listening.
Okay, so we've got a few things going on here. I would say, you know, it generally doesn't go well when you snoop on your partner. And can be a massive violation of their trust. Most of us, I would say, lots of people have done it. And, you know, sometimes you just don't get found out, but usually it becomes a pretty slippery slope where even if you didn't find anything, it's quite rare, I find, that people only do it the once. It usually starts to become a habit. And, you know, realistically, if you actually don't trust your partner, there's more that you need to be doing than, you know, checking up their search history. However, this has happened, right? It's happened once and they've been looking at porn. So now we get on to the issue of what is this person's problem with the idea of their partner watching porn?
Yes.
Do they feel like that is a rejection of them? Do they feel like that's cheating on them? Are they worried about the specific type of porn that it was? We don't have enough information here, but there are all sorts of questions that this person can be both asking themselves and then also talking to their partner about, because I think it's, you know, your choices here are, you know, accept that it's, you know, in most relationships, I'm not saying this person has to be fine with their partner watching porn. However, it would be very good to question what it is that they're bothered by about it. And so that you can then have a conversation about it. So your choices are either, you know, do nothing, pretend that you never snooped and don't do it again and get on with your life, or you know, to reflect on this a bit, maybe do some reading up about it and talk to your partner about what, you know, your sort of comfort levels or boundaries or fears and insecurities are around that.
What are the stats of people watching porn, like percentage wise, 1 in 3, 1 in 5? Like, how many are we talking to people? Like, this is a common thing, this listener.
It's,
you know,
unbelievably common, which again doesn't mean that just because it's common that it's inherently good. Also doesn't mean it's inherently bad.
The type of porn I'd be questioning as well, you know, what type of porn is that, what's making you uncomfortable as well, you know?
Yeah, and it's also one to question, because just because someone is interested in a niche of porn doesn't mean that that's necessarily something they want to do in their you know, everyday life.
Good point.
It doesn't mean that they're feeling like, you know, that they're missing out on something in their sex life. You know, it's a bit like trying to police people's imaginations. Our imaginations can go wild, and there are, you know, literally thousands of different niches of porn out there. And so, you know, it's different if this person is saying, look, I think my partner has a problem. They don't want to have sex with me, and I've found out that they're watching porn for 6 to 8 hours a day. You know, it's like, okay, then it's having an impact on your relationship, so that's something to talk about. But in itself, watching porn does not need to be an issue. So yeah,
Few things to get on with there. Yeah, asking yourself questions and asking them questions if you want to go there. Hi, Jen. Since I heard your show, I've been meaning to text, it says. I'm a male. I'm 36. I'm going out with a girl. She's 39. We're together 4 years. I'm a townie. She's a culchie. I really, really like the girl, but the sex is so bad. No passion at all. It's like having sex with a plank. Feels like she has no interest in it at all. I tried talking to her. She just says everything is fine. The idea of breaking up has crossed my mind every time after really disappointing sex. It's so frustrating. Please help.
Oh, so it sounds like this person has done, you know, some of the right things in terms of already bringing this to their partner and, you know, trying to chat about it. And the partner has, by the sounds of it, sort of shut it down. I don't know whether that was to do with how it was brought up. It was potentially said in quite a blamey way. You know, if what you said to your partner was sex with you is like having sex with a plank, I'm not surprised it didn't go very well. So it might, you know, it sounds like it's definitely time to have sit down and have, you know, a more serious chat, maybe arrange a time to discuss it. Ideally when you're, you know, not drinking, not super stressed or tired or hungry, have a chat and just sort of talk about, try and word it from your experience rather than making, you know, judgments of her and how she is during sex. You know, talk about the impact on you, that maybe you're saying like, oh, I'd love to feel like we're more in this together, or I'm wondering if, you know, maybe what's happening sexually isn't quite working for you. Would you give me some more pointers on what you like? Some people are simply very quiet when they're having sex. You know, it's like most of us have been conditioned now, especially through mainstream porn, to believe that women are constantly screaming the house down. And that is, you know, we know from research that most of that, well, it's a performance during porn, obviously, because it's entertainment, but also that it is, you know, that much of the reason that women often make noise during sex with men is to hurry the sex up or to try and make the man feel better about his ego. So, yeah. You know, that might also be a thing here. If your expectations are that she is going to be, you know, incredibly active and vocally loud, that just might not be what she's up for. Or it might be that, you know, she feels a disconnect between you and her. So, again, the best thing to do here is have more communication. And if you find that it's really not working for you, then you don't have to continue dating this person. Maybe you're just very sexually incompatible. And that's a shame. But also, life goes on. You can date someone else who hopefully
sexually
you'll feel more
incompatible. Interesting. OK. We'll do one more, and this was quite a long email, and I really feel for this person. It says, hi Jen, I want to be anonymous. I'm in a relationship with a man with adult ADHD. We're great together, being parents, but we're not great partners. There's no intimacy at all. He has gone to the GP and he's got medication, Viagra, but they don't seem to work. I've been a few years now since we've had any sort of a sex life. He has tried, but he said he gets too anxious and he just can't. We do talk openly about it and can't come up with anything that will work for both of us. I have come up with so many different scenarios over the years, but he's not into it at all. I'm at the stage, I just want to have an affair. I don't want another man in my life. But I get so frustrated at times. I keep having scenarios in my head and think, am I going mad? There's nothing I can do to make him change his mind. I don't know what to do anymore, this person says.
Jesus, I mean, that just sounds like there's so much suffering in that. It sounds like it's absolutely, you know, that both of them sound racked with, you know, kind of fear and sadness and confusion around this. And I mean, I really feel for them, because there's just a ton of options. I would say absolutely number one, go see a sex therapist. You know, there's so many ways that someone else can give you ideas and have you feel quite, you know, heard and held and supported in, you know, what is a very difficult scenario.
Yeah, it seems like they're at that stage now where they have to go seek professional help. If she doesn't want another person or another man in her life, that seems to be the step, right? She's tried everything.
Well, and you don't have to wait that long, right, Jen? You don't have to be in crisis to go see a therapist or sex therapist, for sure. But certainly by the time that you feel like you're at your wit's end and have tried everything, you know, yes, it might already be too far gone, potentially. But, you know, that's not the only option here. So there's sex therapy, for sure. I think there'll be loads of options for these two within that. And then also this person saying she feels like having an affair. You know, I know many, many people and have worked with lots of couples where for whatever set of reasons, one or both of them, you know, would like to continue living together, maybe co-parenting, but don't want to have sex anymore. And that can be a very good opportunity to open up your relationship.
Yeah. I was just thinking of that polyamorous relationship.
Well, it could be poly, although poly implies that you're in love with more than one person. Okay. We could be talking about other kinds of non-monogamy where, you know, you might still basically have your kind of main romantic nesting partner who you co-parent with. You just have either very little sex or no sex at all with them. But you might have, you know, sort of just very casual sex relationships with one other person or maybe multiple other people. Or you might start doing kind of parallel relationships, which is more closer to polyamory, where you potentially have, you know, kind of a full on relationship with more than one person, which obviously takes a lot of communication and time to sort of process all that and work out your boundaries and kind of, you know, the trials and tribulations of that. But that absolutely, just because you're not, you know, again, sort of currently sexually compatible, does not mean that you have to break up. So loads of options for those people there.
Excellent work, Rachel, thank you so much. We still have a few more to get through. We'll get to them next week on sex therapy, and you can get any queries or questions into us, jen@rte.ie. Do you want an update on the toaster?
Go on.
He's gone for the stainless steel one. He's the best boy. There's going to be lots of sex tonight in the Zamperelli household. Woohoo! Rachel, thanks a million. Thanks for coming on the show. Always a pleasure. She is our sex and relationship therapist. She is with us every single week. Is there anything that you need to talk to her about? You can go through us, jen@rte.ie, and you can follow Rachel on Instagram. She's at Rachel Jane Cook with the knee on the end of the cook on Instagram if you want to go and follow her. She's loads of great advice on there as well.
Jennifer Zamperelli.
Weekday morning from 9
on 2FM.